from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Bishops from South America and elsewhere will gather in Rome in October to discuss the many challenges facing the church in the massive Amazon region. This week, the Vatican issued the blueprint for the meeting, and the document has caused a stir. Edward Penton, the Register's Rome correspondent, brings the story. Plus, Hong Kong has been embroiled in protest and controversy over a new law of extradition that marks what many fear is a crackdown on freedoms by the communist government of China. We discuss what's behind the upheaval. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio, and I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, the senior editor for the Register and my co-host. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, good to be with you.
So the Amazon is South America covers 35% of South America, of the continent, and it extends across almost 3 million square miles. This is a huge region. It's filled with ecological, social, economic, and pastoral challenges, and this fall in October, the bishops will gather in what is called the Pan-Amazonian region. And they will gather in Rome, actually, to discuss the problems of this region and how the church can respond. Many eyes are on this, as they have been on all of the synods during Pope Francis's pontificate. And this one has some implications, even though it's a regional synod, has some implications that may affect the rest of the church, universal. So Edward Penton is joining us now from Rome. Edward, welcome.
Thank you, Jeanette. Good to be with you again.
So Edward, this, as always, during the pontificate of Pope Francis, all eyes are on the upcoming synod. This is kind of unusual because synods didn't capture this much attention in years past, but certainly it captures our attention now. This document that was released, it's called an Instrumentum Laboris. It's a blueprint or a working document for the synod. What were some of the key themes of the document?
Right. Well, it's really focusing on two aspects primarily, which is, first of all, the ecological aspect related to this region. It describes the Amazon as like an artery of the world and says that it's the second most vulnerable area of the planet after the Arctic when it comes to climate change. It refers a lot to Laudato Si and takes a lot of its starting points from there, which is Pope Francis' encyclical on the environment. And then the second part is really the human threats to the indigenous people there from exploitation and other problems like drug abuse, trafficking, alcoholism, all these things, which these scourges which unfortunately they face over there. And it's really trying to draw attention to that and see what the church can bring to them and to help them. So those are the two main aspects of it.
So why did this document cause a stir?
Well, I think it's really one of what I've heard from people I've spoken to, and what struck me as well is that it's really one of priorities here. The emphasis is primarily on listening, and it talks about Cardinal Lorenzo Baldessari, the head of the Synod of Bishops, told journalists on Monday at the release of the document that it's a pastoral reflection open to recognizing diversity and listening to the Amazonian reality with all its cultural and ecclesial facets. Now, one of the things that people noticed was lacking perhaps in the document was really the starting point being the church and revelation and Christ, essentially. And instead, it focuses much more on listening to the Amazon. It talks about the voice of Amazonia. The first section of the document, it's divided into three parts, is all about that, is looking at what they have to offer and the cultures there. And then it goes on to ecology. And then it talks about the prophetic church, focusing on, again, ecological and pastoral issues with an Amazonian and missionary face. But none of these passages really emphasize the church's teaching. There's no mention of sort of the church's moral theology or anything like that. It's very much geared towards respecting and listening to the Amazonian cultures, which, of course, although they've there's been evangelization there. It's these were pagan cultures, pagan rituals and ceremonies they used to have, and so those are all kind of held up and seen to be wanting to respect them and take the starting point from that rather than from the church.
Well, Edward, at first blush, it would seem that this is not an especially important synod. It's a regional synod, and it seems obviously limited in scope. And yet, here we're hearing concerns that this could have considerable ramifications for the universal church.
Yes, and in fact, various issues have sort of connected with that, Matthew, because it talks about, for example, one of the passages which is of concern to quite a few people is when it talks about the Eucharist, and it says that it calls on bishops' conferences in the region with a healthy decentralization to adapt the Eucharistic ritual to their cultures. Now, that can be applied to the region, but the concern is especially because bishops, for example, in Germany have said, well, a lot of this can be applied elsewhere. And in fact, the whole issue of it talks about ordaining married men or men of mature age with families to the priesthood in order to bring the sacraments to remote areas in the Amazon. German bishops have said, well, this could be applied to Germany, too, where there's a shortage of priests. So there's a sort of there could be a sort of undermining, for example, of the discipline of clerical celibacy beyond the Amazon, even though it's supposed to be restricted to the Amazon.
And we've seen issues emerge out of these individual synods that have proven to be very controversial. I'm thinking of Amoris Laetitia with the whole controversy over a communion for the divorced and civilly remarried. We also have a term that emerged out of the last synod, which is all over this instrumentum laboris, this new working document, and that's synodality. So does that tie into the concern about taking something that is being discussed about the Amazon and trying to apply it across whole parts of the church?
Yeah, I think this is exactly what's happening, Matthew, and it seems quite clear now, now this is the fourth synod we'll have under this pontificate, that they seem to be used to push through a certain agenda. And as you say, it was the divorced and remarried in the Synod on the Family, the Synodality for the Youth Synod. And now this one, it's going to be not only, I think, clerical celibacy, but I think there are other issues too, which are also going to be used within this synod to be pushed through. For example, it talks about reconsidering the linking of church authority with her sacramental, judicial, and administrative duties, especially holy orders. So that's, as one critic said, it's separating the authority of the church from sacramental orders, from holy orders of the priesthood. And that would be a huge change. So, but on the other hand, we do have to keep things in context. This is only a preliminary document, as Cardinal Baldessari stressed at the press conference this week. And so, you know, a lot of these things may not see it through. As happened with the Youth Synod, there were items of concern in that instrumentum laboris which didn't make it through to the Synod, and maybe some of these won't either.
So, Edward, why did the Holy Father actually think that this Synod was needed right now in the Amazon? Has something boiled to a head? Is that why this is coming now?
Well, I think primarily that the reason I think the Pope has voiced about this for wanting the Synod is the ecological one. I think he's concerned that that's a serious problem, and he's always been concerned about exploitation by big corporations of poor communities, and that's going on in this region. So I think that's why he wants this.
It's interesting because in the reactions to the document, you know, we knew that the part about the potential of married priest could come from this document or from this synod, but I think what has gotten the most conversation right now has been the ecological conversion, as the document puts it, and that, as you said, it doesn't seem to draw on church teaching about the centrality of Christ, but on other things, and so that has been a at least to me a little bit surprising to capture the attention this week. What are the next steps, Edward?
For the Synod, I think we're going to have to see what other comments come out of the Vatican on this. I doubt there'll be much more until the Synod now, because this is the main document which forms the basis of discussions. And now this follows a preparatory document that came out last year, which involved questionnaires being sent out to bishops' conferences and communities over in the Amazon. Those have all been done. That's culminated in this document. And now I think we'll just wait to see who actually one aspect which will be interesting is who is going to be attending this. We know that bishops from the region, of course, are attending it. I think all the bishops from that big region will be in Rome for this. But there'll also be others. There'll be experts chosen, and the Pope can choose 15% of the attendees. And so it'll be interesting to see who he chooses for that. And one aspect which I think has often been talked about, well, in the last few days at least, is the influence of the German church on this synod. And I think it'll be interesting to see within these appointments how many German prelates and experts will be brought in for this. They're already involved in the drawing up of this document, and so it'll be interesting to see
one of the key figures
also in this.
One of the key figures in this, who's emerged, and certainly in this pontificate, is Cardinal Claudio Umas of Brazil. Is that right? Who has something of a track record, especially in the area of clerical celibacy, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. I mean, he's pushed this for many years. And back in 2006, he made headlines saying that he wanted changes in clerical celibacy. He's the general relator of the synod, and he said this back in 2006, just before he was appointed prefect for the Congregation for Clergy. And in fact, as soon as he got off the plane in Rome to start up that appointment, he was ordered to sign a statement confirming the church's discipline on clerical celibacy. And so he's always had this view, and I think he sees this now, possibly, I mean, we don't know, because I did ask him for an interview, but he didn't want to comment on this. But it seems to be that he would like this synod to be part of a way to change the discipline. But I think that's going to cause quite a lot of opposition because of that.
Well, Edward, thank you very much for your reporting on this. Our listeners can go to Edward's report summarizing the synod document. It's called Amazonian Synods, Working Document Charts Course Through Three Conversions. Thanks a lot, Ed.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
When we come back, Matthew and I will discuss the news coming out of Hong Kong and China. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Matthew Bunsen.
The National Catholic Register is that rarest of institutions in Catholic media, striving always to be faithful, orthodox, timely, and dedicated to journalistic excellence. Catholics know they can always depend on the Register for the news they need to know from an authentically Catholic perspective.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner.
Check out EWTN's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DiMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio. I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, the Senior Editor for the Register and co-host of Register Radio. Matthew, you just returned from Shanghai on family matters, but a very interesting place. It was your first time there. What were your impressions?
A remarkable city to be able to observe two things. The first is the phenomenal growth in China, across all of China, the development, the construction, the modernization. And at the same time, however, you can see as well the great social struggle that's taking place because of this development, because of the shocking, shattering changes that have taken place economically and even socially. So China clearly has a lot of challenges, and a number of the people that I talk to have expressed bewilderment in ways at the pace of change, and they're not sure exactly what the future holds.
Matthew, was this your first time on the mainland?
It was.
Okay, so you'd been to Hong Kong before?
I have not been to Hong Kong, actually.
Oh, so it's, okay.
Yeah, so this is sort of an exciting opportunity to really dig into Chinese culture. Grew up in Hawaii, as you know, so very familiar with it. And I have to say that that everyone I met was kind. They were very welcoming. And Shanghai is one of the most fascinating cities I've ever visited.
Very nice. Well, I wish I could have such an opportunity. Of course, this is a very sensitive time for China, and really, it's been an interesting full year in terms of Chinese and Vatican relations, and that's not really what we're going to talk about right now. But Hong Kong this week has really been rocked by massive protests and violent protests, which has been somewhat unusual because Hong Kong is known for being able for the way the police force has dealt with problems in a respectful way, and this is sort of seems to be turning a corner. What was the protest about?
Well, the protest, as you've noted in our introduction today, is about a proposed law of extradition. It has a very long title. It's the Fugitive Offender and Mutual Legal Assistance in Criminal Matters Legislation.
Huh?
It's a Bill 2019, exactly. Essentially, what it boils down to is that mainland China, the Beijing government, will have extradition rights for the first time over any city resident of Hong Kong. Now, that includes foreign nationals as well as tourists, and it would move them from the traditional place of Hong Kong for their courts into the mainland courts. Now, that is something that is extremely alarming to the residents of Hong Kong who exist under the sort of the classic title of one culture, two laws type of a situation.
Mm-hmm. And why is that? I mean, that's obvious to its history. There's always been this tension kind of between Hong Kong and the mainland.
There has. Really since the end of the British colonial status in 1997, when the one country, two systems principle, as it was established, came into being. Hong Kong was left with its own legislature, economic system, and a lot of independence socially and politically. The Beijing regime, the Beijing government, has been very slowly but almost relentlessly encroaching into that in order to bring Hong Kong more and more into the legal system. Now, that if this extradition bill were to be approved and implemented, it would mean that many of those rights that are very much cherished and have been since 1997 would be directly threatened. And it would have implications for the church, because while there are certain guarantees that that would not be applied for religious persecution, one of the fears is that they can use this by accusing dissidents and members of the church and those engaged in active ministry of economic crimes, of other types of accusations, and then bring them into mainland China for trial with a very murky future in doing that.
And this is why there was a strong response from Christians. They were part of the protesters, right?
Absolutely. We're seeing great alarm among Christians of all denominations over this law. And we're seeing the church in Hong Kong, which has, for the most part, really since 1997, but also throughout its history. You go all the way back to 1841 with the foundation of the Catholic presence in Hong Kong. with the arrival of the British, and then they needed to provide pastoral care for especially the Irish Catholic soldiers in the British Army. The church has typically, historically, played a somewhat low profile, and yet in recent years we have seen the church much more engaged in the political life of the city out of fear, out of concern of where this could be heading. And here we come to the name that I know a lot of our listeners are very familiar with, and that's Cardinal Zen, the former Bishop of Hong Kong, now retired, who has been also one of the sharpest critics of Beijing's handling of Hong Kong, and in particular the Vatican's agreement with China over the appointment of bishops.
And of course, I mean, all of that has to do with control, with the control of the communist government and the crackdown on freedoms, the controversy over the last year about the appointment of bishops and the Vatican seeming to accept less control over the appointment of bishops in this agreement. This is a similar topic. I mean, this doesn't necessarily relate the problem, the protests don't. Doesn't necessarily relate to religious freedom, but it relates to freedom in general, freedom to govern oneself. There's also, though, been a crackdown on religious freedom under this current regime, right?
That's absolutely true. Under the current premier, Xi Jinping, we have seen a very direct effort at what is being termed sinicization. In other words, really attempting to take over much more directly the life of religious practice in China. Now, that extends across all of the religions in China. Former Senator Brownback, who is the human rights advocate, essentially, for the United States globally, has expressed real grave concerns over religious persecution and the diminishment of religious freedom in China. What this extradition bill could possibly do is, where there are about 580,000 Catholics, almost 600,000 Catholics in Hong Kong, they are very concerned that they will also fall under the direct control of the state in exactly the same type of a model that they see on the mainland. And that, for those who may not be familiar, state control, certainly of the Catholic Church, exists under what's called the Catholic Patriotic Association. And that is answerable directly to the Communist Party through what's called the United Front Work Department. And if that were to befall the Catholics in Hong Kong, their lives would be significantly different in practice and daily life compared to what they now have. And I think that is something that they really want to avoid for what's known as the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region, or SAR. They cherish the freedoms that they have right now, and which is why 2 million people went into the streets over the last few weeks to protest this bill. And it, they've had the effect so far of at least of putting the brakes on this. The Hong Kong chief executive, Carrie Lam Cheng Yuet Nor, who herself is Catholic, it recognizes two things. The first, that it's going to be very difficult to pass this now. But the other is that the police at first had a very heavy hand in how they dealt with the rioters. And it really provoked a lot of international criticism and criticism within Hong Kong.
Yeah, so you mentioned that there was an apology. It's strange, you know, almost to hear someone apologize for a law or a bill, you know. But she really did apologize for the way it was handled. She suspended it, but she did not pull it off the table altogether. So, of course, she still has the pressure from these religious groups, particularly Christians, but it's not simply Christians. There was a gathering at the time, a colloquy of six religious leaders in Hong Kong, the Protestant churches, Buddhist, Taoism, Islam, and Confucianism. And all of them really came out to put pressure on Lam to withdraw the bill. They were somewhat satisfied with her apology, but still, I think the pressure is there. So it'll be interesting in the next few weeks to see how this is handled, because it's really it's an ongoing situation.
It is. And one thing, though, that we can derive a lot of hope from is the fact that this bill has been suspended, but everyone seems to agree, and this is something the Hong Kong diocese has urged, As they put it, we should not rush to amend what is the current Fugitive Offenders Ordinance without looking at real public draft and other things. But the other thing that the Hong Kong Diocese has stressed is finding a solution that, as they put it, is in accordance with the principles of justice and jurisprudence through peaceful means. And the protesters have been very peaceful. And we have seen just at the end of this last week an effort on the part of the Hong Kong police to be much more careful in how they're dispersing crowds and how they're dealing with crowds. So there does seem to be a recognition that the eyes of the world are looking at how this is handled. Right. But the other thing that does worry a lot of people in Hong Kong is that, as we saw in 2014, there were protests against the slow withering away of religious freedoms and civil rights and human rights, that they will simply bide their time as they did in 2014, where mm-hmm. they allowed the protest to happen, but they simply wait for interest to diminish, for people's attentions to wane, and then proceed anyway. And that's one of the concerns with this bill, that down the road, it will simply be reintroduced, and it's hard to re-galvanize the type of protests that we've seen in Hong Kong over the last weeks.
And of course, this has been the problem all along with the relationship with China, is they seem to take a step or a couple steps forward and then a step back, but no one recognizes the step back.
Yes.
And we just keep having this step back. So absolutely, our eyes will be watching this. And of course, because of your wife's family, who is of Chinese origin, we get to watch this a little bit more closely through you, who has a keen interest in it. So thank you for bringing us this information and for sharing a little bit about your trip with us.
Yeah, it's great to be with you.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. And, of course, please subscribe to our print edition. For Register Radio here on EWTN, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Thank you from our producers, Jeff Burson and Matthew Bunsen, for listening. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
This is EWTN Global Catholic Radio.